You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
This is a heck of a weekend. Hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. We kick off the Monday show with some turmoil inside the White House.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford, off the U.S. 60 and Mesa Drive.
Yeah, there's turmoil inside the White House because of what's been happening outside of the White House with the filings from Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. It's being called somewhat of a dump, a document dump on Friday with several filings, including Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort. Now, because of those, top House Democrats have now raised the prospect of impeachment or the real possibility of prison time for President Donald Trump if it is proved that he directed illegal hush money payments to women.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what we learned on Friday, and this is not the end. I don't even think it's the middle.
I'm with you on that.
I think we're very close at the beginning, if you will. The allegations made by Michael Cohen in the court documents are of the campaign finance variety, violating campaign finance laws, specifically that, and if you read between the lines, because some of this is redacted,
a lot of it is redacted.
They draw a black magic marker through it, Michael Cohen apparently has audio, possibly recordings of him being instructed to make payments to these women and have them sign these non-disclosure agreements, one of them being the porn actress, the other one being a Playboy model, to cover up affairs right before an election, and that would violate campaign finance laws.
Okay, so in one of the filings, you've got the Justice Department formally said, Trump coordinated and directed Michael Cohen to violate campaign finance laws. Now, Cohen has admitted arranging this hush money payment during the 2016 election for two women who had claimed to have had trysts with the elect.
Can we stop right there? Is this still alleged?
I don't think we're at a... I think the
trysts happened. The documents have come out.
But
we know Stormy Daniels has one assigned piece of paper.
Here's the thing, though. I think there is an important distinction to be made. It might be minor to some, but I think it's critical to this discussion, Bruce. And that is, that information of which I've just read to you came from the Southern District of New York.
Right.
That did not come from Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller.
Fair. But Mueller has been working with, and there is a connection there that Mueller... And again, this is complicated. If you're looking for an A plus B equals C argument, you're never going to get it.
Yeah, it's not that easy.
That there are certain witnesses and certain players in this that Mueller says, that's not part of mine. I'll hand that over to Southern District of New York. Michael Cohen became one of those people when it came to the campaign finance part. The other part that came out, and again, now, is that an impeachable offense? I would tell you, I think that's a tough putt. That if you're going to impeach or attempt to impeach a president for campaign finance, these are things that are usually taken care of with fines, right?
Yeah.
Campaign finance violation. You pay a fine, everybody skirts the rules a little bit, you know, type thing, and you move on.
So while these payments may appear to be clear violation of campaign finance laws, it's not clear that Trump knew he could be indicted while in office, all right? There's a lot of back and forth, and legal scholars have debated that for quite some time. And in any case, though, you've got Politico that's been reporting that prosecutors would likely need to prove that Trump knew he was committing this crime. And then you've got others who have been coming out, predominantly within the Democratic Party, who says that the payments would be an impeachable offense. That's Jerry Nadler, the New York Democrat who will chair the House Judiciary Committee. But he had also said that whether they're important enough to justify an impeachment is a different question. Adam Schiff is also chiming in on this, a Democrat representative from California. Here's what he had to say.
My takeaway is there's a very real prospect that on the day Donald Trump leaves office, the Justice Department may indict him, that he may be the first president in quite some time to face the real prospect of jail time.
Yeah, because I think while in office, there's little to no chance of that. And there is then, as part of this, we're past the three-ring circus. I don't know how many.
Now?
Like 9 to 12 rings.
Wow, that's a huge
of circus going on. There's multiple tents that Trump would, strategy-wise, be better to deal with this while in office and avoid jail time as opposed to become a private citizen and lose the protection of the office.
Yeah.
That would be part of the negotiation, whatever you want to call it, part of the strategy on the part of a defendant and on the party the prosecution, knowing that there is a date on a calendar when you could open yourself up to these things. I don't see in the Cohn filings, while campaign finance laws appear, at least according to testimony and evidence, appear to have been broken, is that an impeachable offense? I would say good luck.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get Congress involved.
Clinton was impeached, but was it removed because he couldn't get the Congress? Are you going to get the 2/3 of the Senate? I think that's we're pretty much at a hard no at that point.
Okay, but here's the other thing, though, Bruce. You're talking about, is it impeachable just based upon these payments, right? Like the campaign finance violations?
Two instances of felony campaign finance violations.
So on those two instances, I think that that's a reach.
Tough putt, but, as we would call it, yes.
Keep in mind, though, that Robert Mueller is really playing out his hand strategically here. We don't know what he knows. These 55 pages that were released on Friday in these court filings, they do start to paint a picture of just how deep the investigation surrounding President Trump has gone. Now, what exactly is in it? Well, Mueller is playing it quite well, showing only those cards he needs to reveal to take the investigation to the next step. So while just based upon the campaign violations that appear to have been laid out in some of these papers, I don't think that there's enough for impeachment there.
I would agree with that.
But add other things. If, and I'm not trying to speculate, folks, we got to wait to find out. But if there are other things, it could then build upon one another.
I want credit for it. I'm not going to lie. Pamela and I have not passed judgment prior to evidence, testimony, witnesses, etc. Plenty of people have already said it's obvious that he's guilty of sin. Other people said there's nothing there. Neither of you know. Honestly,
anybody
who's telling
right now,
you they know the outcome of it is your opinion.
Agreed.
That is your Twitter opinion. And thankfully, the judiciary operates independent of your opinion. It'll operate with facts. It'll operate with testimony. Here's what came out of the Cohn filing, though. And this is another whole nother tent. We got to go to a different
circus
tent.
So we've wrapped up this tent. We're going
campaign
to the next one.
Campaign finance. That's why Mueller gave the campaign finance thing to Southern District New York. You guys can go after him
leave
on this.
To the state
3 years,
York.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not a big deal. We care about Michael Cohn for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Mueller. Apparently, through his testimony, plea agreements, yada, 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 cooperating, Michael Cohn has implicated Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager, and Donald Trump in what sounds like some sort of a criminal conspiracy.
What do you mean?
A conspiracy in which, again, you have to believe him. There has to be evidence. Listen, Michael Cohn is hardly the most credible witness. I will grant you that.
But
right?
He also likes to record things, too.
Does he have recordings being instructed by Trump and or Manafort to meet with, deal with, and become a liaison and a go-between between an unnamed Russian who offered synergy between the Russian government and the Trump campaign?
Where's that all coming from? What do you mean?
That's from the court filings.
Okay, so in the filings on Friday, we learned that Cohen is saying
he is that if you have to read between the lines, there is an unnamed Russian government official, and maybe that terminology is not right, who offered, and the terminology was synergy.
Okay.
Take that for what it's worth.
I don't know what that means, but okay, continue.
Synergy between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. And
so they're going to work together is what they're trying to do.
And would that, and is the evidence of that, and is whatever other emails, documents, recordings of that, proof of a criminal conspiracy to work with a foreign government to affect the outcome of an election.
We don't know.
I do not know, but that is Michael Cohen. That is apparently one of the
chips he's given them
that he's put on the table, okay, saying, here's something you need to look at more. And we also believe that that might have something to do with the fact why they knew Manafort was lying to them.
Oh.
And that Manafort lied about this unnamed third Russian, and they knew he was lying about it. Because
they already had
they have testimony or even recordings,
emails,
of it. Who knows?
Something, maybe.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to unpack here.
Well, I think we're in the first inning. I think it's fair to say. I think we're in the first inning.
I know we got to wrap this segment here, but if you've been watching the news over the weekend in light of these documents released on Friday, I'm sure you've heard a lot of pundits out there that say, this is over. He's wrapping it up. This is evidence that it's wrapped up. I've heard that so many times. I'm with you, Bruce. I don't think that this is over anytime soon.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're just getting warmed up.
Grab the popcorn. Is that what you're saying, buddy?
And Cohen is a minor fish in this. You know,
there are bigger fish in the sea.
There are much bigger fish
to fry.
When you start moving up the chain. And if you are going to try to prove some sort of a criminal conspiracy, not just campaign finance violations. So we shall see. You know? Those of us that like to live in a fact-based world, we'll wait and see. What is the evidence that proves that? But there are some interesting tidbits out there that when you start connecting dots, you're like, wow, if they can prove that, that's pretty darn serious. But then again, you do have to prove it. The lead brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive, online at burgeford.com. Should you have to pass, call it a social media check, in order to buy a gun?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So, I understand where this is coming from. The idea that you need to pass a social media check to buy a gun because...
What?
Well, no, but here's where I understand where it's coming from. When we've had some of these horrific school shootings, mass shootings, people go back and they're like, oh my God, look at this guy's been threatening crazy stuff
on
Facebook.
How did you not see this?
The red flags,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But does acting crazy on social media automatically disqualify you from owning a gun? If so, we're going to have about four people left with guns.
Oh, well, don't tell that to a New York lawmaker who has now introduced a bill. Holy cow, people. The bill, Bruce, would require police to scrutinize social media and online searches if you are applying for a handgun license. Now, here's the thing. What this would do is it would require you, yes, you, to turn over your login information.
Oh, hold your breath.
So that investigators could look back over 3 years worth of Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, Google, Yahoo, Bing searches over the previous year would also be checked. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I can understand where it comes from. I disagree with the
premise.
The genesis of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you want to go back and try to find this on your own, so be it. But social media, free speech.
Right. And should government, be it state, local, or federal, be in the business of investigating your social media profile to determine whether or not you can exercise your Second Amendment rights?
Listen, you know, you and I have talked about common sense gun laws. And I know even saying like gun regulation will get people's feathers all ruffled. But I think that there are certain things that we could do as a society to take it to the next level. And I say that as a gun owner myself. Mm-hmm. But this is way a bridge too far. This is Senator Kevin Parker out of the state of New York talking about why he has introduced this bill. This should be rich.
It's a new time. It's a new technology. It's time that we, in fact, start having that conversation about how we monitor social media.
They're making the argument again that when you look at some of these people who have committed crimes, they have they've telegraphed their punch on social media. They've ranted about blacks, Jews, Muslims, whatever, and then gone out to commit crimes. I would make the argument that, as opposed to using it to disqualify people as gun owners, that you use some of these social media rants where people, credible threats, you know, the types of things that get you banned on social media, that law enforcement follow up on those. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, if you want to go about it that way, don't use it as a denial. Use it as the onus to go in and knock on somebody's door and go, hey, we want to talk to you about your Facebook post of yesterday,
yeah,
where you wanted to burn the synagogue down and kill all the Jews.
So if you want to look for some sort of alternative to that, then how about creating a court order of protection to bar people considered dangerous from having those guns? I mean, if you want to go that route, then that would be a little bit different.
I can at least understand that. Yeah.
And I just throw that out there right now with not even thinking about it too much, because you could probably shoot holes in that argument even. I just think that, like, giving the government, because, I mean, in essence, that's what you're doing, access to your online history through logins and searches, it just makes me really uncomfortable.
But understood, as it should.
Here's a little bit more on what is being proposed in the state of New York, which would... In essence, you know, you would have to pass a social media check to get a gun, not just a background check, but a social media check.
The unique bill would give police access to 3 years of Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, and Instagram postings. They also would check a year of internet searches. Applicants would turn over their login information.
Yeah, oh, man. Chime in
your
on this for
internet
us.
Searches?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, on the open mic line, 602-200-2733. We want to hear from you guys on this one. I'm with you, Bruce, where I get the knee-jerk reaction of why this lawmaker thinks that this is a good idea.
The red flag argument. Look at the things these
so
people say.
It's so frustrating. Yeah. As soon as there's some sort of shooting, and as soon as there's some sort of mass shooting, because unfortunately we'll probably have one in the next couple of months that we have to tell you guys about, inevitably, what do people first do?
We go back and we forensically look at all the stuff they've posted.
And then we say, well, why didn't somebody see this already?
Look at the picture of him holding the gun with the swastika. You should have known.
Yeah, but if you were looking to purchase a gun, would you want to hand over all of your login information? Listen, I got nothing to hide, but frankly, it's none of your business.
Your beeswax.
602-200-2733. It is our open mic line. We want to hear from you on this story. And hey, that open mic line is brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
There's something about a woman, specifically, when she gets engaged and starts planning a wedding, that many of them turn into absolute lunatics.
Some.
I'm willing to stand on many.
I'm going to go with some.
We have the latest example of said bridezilla.
Yeah.
And her dress code.
Oh, you got to hear this, folks.
Based on your weight.
It is incredible.
We'll tell you about it next, coming up on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It seems like every couple of weeks there's another story in which you can rightfully, reasonably make fun of a bride for any number of a bizarre requests. The bridezilla argument.
Even like a reality show about bridezillas.
Right?
Yeah.
Nah, whether it's the dress, whether it's the guest list, whether it's a variety of things, the location. But the latest one is a bridezilla who sent out, as part of the invite to the coming nuptials, or coming up in 2019, a destination wedding, Pamela, in Hawaii.
Okay, so there's this post that has now gone viral. I'm going to read some of it to you.
Okay.
Let's go with, who's ready for Hawaii in 2019?
I am!
Yay, all right. Hey, okay. You know what? Anticipation of the wedding, and believe me, I know it's a long way away, but
okay,
I'd like to announce the dress code.
Okay, there's a dress code for the wedding.
There's a dress code.
All right, fine.
She goes on to say, the dress code is very specific because it'll be used to create an incredible visual effect.
There's a visual effect we're going for.
If it's done right, Bruce, it will make our synchronized dancing along the beach really pop.
Okay, wait a minute. There's going to be synchronized dancing on
apparently
the beach. Already, my little spidey sensors just went, synchronized dancing on the beach at a wedding. This may not be a wedding I'm attending. Keep going.
All right, so women.
Yeah, ladies.
100 to 160 pounds.
Excuse me?
100 to 160.
Is that the requirement of what you must weigh?
If you weigh between 100 and 160. Oh, yeah, she's giving you a weight. on this. If that's what you weigh, then you're going to wear a green velvet sweater, orange suede pants. Who the heck could find orange suede pants? And why would I actually plunk down a chunk of change for orange suede pants that I'm never going to wear again?
Orange suede pants.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
But can we just stop right there? That your taste in clothing right off the bat makes me think this is not a wedding for the long con.
How about this, though? Louboutin heels. Yes.
Those are expensive, aren't they?
Those are extremely expensive.
Louboutin, yes.
Because she says, you want the famous red-heeled shoe? When we spin and lift our feet, the effect will amaze you.
I'll take your word for it.
Hurt my bank account. And let's throw in a Burberry scarf just for good measure.
Yeah, Burberry. Got it.
Okay, guys, 100 to 200 pounds.
Okay, the smaller gentleman.
Purple fuzzy jacket, soda hat, all-white trainers, plain glow sticks. Women. 160 pounds plus. Exactly. This is all about weight. All black sweaters, pants. Guys, 200 plus.
You know, if you weigh over 160 pounds, you're a woman attending this wedding. They want you to wear all black, so what? It has a slimming effect?
Men, if you're over 200 pounds,
over
you got to wear camo.
I have to wear camo to go to this?
And black sneakers.
So that what? I don't show up in photos?
There are other things for the kids as well. You also got to bring a change of clothing. And they say, because you know what, you're going to change after dancing. All jokes aside, we want you to invest in an outfit valued at least $1,000.
So there's a weight-based dress code for this destination wedding that it appears to, in some ways, shame some people for their weight.
But my spidey senses are going off on this. This just seems way too ridiculous to be real.
You say that, but the lunatic bride followed it up that once this post of hers, it showed up on Reddit.
Oh, you never want to show up on Reddit.
No good comes from being on Reddit.
No.
So it shows up on Reddit, and she finds out about it.
Oh, no.
So now, she has some addendums. She is announcing a party prior to this. It's happening, by the way, this week, to find out who the snitch is. I'll be hosting my first ever polygraph party at my house.
You are kidding. See,
Saturday at 8 p.m. Bring your inner Sherlock Holmes because we'll be hunting out the snitch who put me on blast. You think I'm kidding? We just bought a real polygraph test on Amazon. After the testing is over and we find who the rat is, we'll all celebrate with drinks and appetizers. If you can't make it to the polygraph party, you'll be presumed guilty unless you can provide a valid excuse. If you're innocent, you have nothing to worry about. So now she wants to find out who is it that had a problem with her weight-based dress
code,
put it up on the interwebs.
You want me to shell out a chunk of change to fly to Hawaii for your wedding? Okay, if you're important in my life, you know what? I'll make that commitment. If this is what's important to you,
right,
I might do that. But wait, you want me to spend $1,000 on my attire for your wedding and attend a polygraph party because someone snitched you out for being ridiculous? Nobody's going to go. Is this real? Is this real?
I mean, there's certainly a chance it is. But I mean, and this has been ongoing for a while.
Oh, my goodness.
And she is more upset, obviously, at the fact that people think her dress code is a lunatic. Now, here's another thing that almost guarantees why I would never be invited to a wedding like this.
I think there are many reasons, but what one is jumping out to you, Bruce?
She writes, my husband and I are certified spiritual healers with over 10 years of experience.
Okay. Yeah.
She makes the argument that they have this synchronized dance that is part of their spiritualness.
Okay.
The expensive clothing, because you're supposed to spend at least $1,000.
Yeah.
Your expensive clothing represents the riches we wish to come. The black and camouflage outfits represent the aura of the devil that we must shoo away.
Oh, the fat people are the devil.
I was going to say, so the fact that I'm over 200, I'm going
to
represent
the devil, according to her.
The devil that must be shooed away, and I have to wear camo. Ladies, you have to wear black. She says, you wouldn't go to an Indian person's wedding and make fun of their culture and their traditions. So don't judge ours.
Okay, don't be like taking somebody else's culture and using that as your excuse for being lunatic.
Your fat shaming culture is not a culture in and of itself.
All right, so how would you respond?
Wear black or camo
to this wedding invite?
Anything over plus size. And that's over 200 pounds? That's not hard.
And have you been to a wedding with like a major bridezilla?
Okay,
two questions for you on our open mic line. How would you respond to this wedding invite? And have you ever encountered a bridezilla? We want to hear from you on the open mic line. 602-200-2733. 602-200-2733. 800-200-2733. We'll be playing some of those calls back later in the show. You would go. Wait. You would go with bells on.
I'd go to screw with it. You know that.
You would.
Does anybody have any? Right here. I've got some issues. I would like to bring them up.
Where do I
somebody
begin?
To say something before we get done with this thing. A new government study showing the effects of screen time on young kids' minds, including really, really young kids. We'll tell you about that coming up next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
If you've done the new operating system update on your Apple products, your phone or your iPad or whatnot, you'll get a there's a feature on there that it tells you your weekly screen time. And I don't know if you're supposed to be shocked or pleased by whatever that number is. I'm like, well, what's the over under? Compared to what? You know?
Do you know what yours is? Do you remember?
I just got one
yesterday.
Last night.
Yeah, I got one yesterday too.
That would have been on the iPad. I got it.
Okay.
It said it wasn't a high number.
Okay, mine right now. What, my
are
weekly.
You looking at, you're going to screen. Is it screen,
screen time?
Time
yeah. I'm looking, yeah. My weekly report for my phone. I'm down 6% from last week for an average of 3 hours and 46 minutes.
Where are you seeing? Okay,
oh, I just showed up on my phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm looking at screen time to see if there's a thingy. But yeah, anyway, so it'll tell you. It'll give you your numbers, if you will.
Right. Okay. And I do a lot of work on my phone versus a laptop or an iPad. So it is high. And I recognize that. And I wonder what it's doing to me. But as parents, we're also wondering, what is it doing to our children?
Okay.
And 60 Minutes did a really fascinating piece last night that if you hadn't had the chance to watch, I highly recommend you go back and check it out. But here is what they're learning so far. You've got some 4,500 kids who are now part of this research funded by the National Institute of Health. And they're saying that children who are spending a lot of time on this technology, they're having a thinning of the cortex in their brain.
What?
That's typically thought to be a maturational process. So mm-hmm. What we would expect to see later is happening a little bit earlier.
Should parents be concerned by that?
We don't know if it's being caused by the screen time. We don't know yet if it's a bad thing. It won't be until we follow them over time that we will see if there are outcomes that are associated with the differences that we're seeing in this single snapshot.
So there's a lot of we don't know.
Right.
We're trying to connect the dots, but we're not 100% sure what we're seeing.
Because they're
still too new.
It's still too
right?
new. So that thinning
of
that
the cortex,
thinning
that doesn't
the
sound
brain
good.
Cortex.
I don't want my brain cortex thinned anymore.
Starts to happen when kids spend about 7 hours a day or more on screen time.
That seems heavy.
So let's just get it down to about 2.
Okay.
The interviews and data from the NIH study have already revealed something else. Kids who spend more than 2 hours a day on screens got lower scores on thinking and language tests.
So okay. you're starting to see like a variety here. Now, the other aspect about this is something that I see all the time, and I'm sure you do as well.
Okay.
You know, I do grocery shopping on the weekends. I hit up a little Costco. You're running around Target.
Sure.
Or even at, like, soccer games with my daughter. You'll see the young babies, the little ones, who are even still in strollers or are in
tucked
high
in
chairs.
In a car seat or something still.
At a restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And what do they have in their hands?
They've
a lot
a
of
screen.
Times. They'll have mom or
and
dad's
they're watching
cell phone.
Bubble guppies.
Whatever.
I don't know if that's a thing.
Bubble guppies.
Is that
guppy,
that's a thing, right?
Absolutely.
Bubble guppies is a thing. I got it right.
Oh, Riley loved bubble guppies when she was young. But you got to keep in mind, or at least start to think about, how is that impacting them?
If you're concerned about your teenager being addicted to their iPhone, your infant is much more vulnerable and using the exact same device. Because the experience of making something happen is so much more gratifying to them.
And they did these studies, which were really interesting to watch.
What we do know about babies playing with iPads is that they don't transfer what they learn from the iPad to the real world, which is to say that if you give a child an app where they play with virtual Legos, virtual blocks, and stack them, and then put real blocks in front of them, they start all over.
It doesn't necessarily, visualizing doesn't necessarily train them. I think that's going to be a tough sell, and here's why. How many, and there's some new parents out there, who are for lack of better terms, willing to roll the dice. Because that screen keeps the kid from screaming bloody murder. That screen, bubble guppies or the video, calms them down, lets mom and dad have dinner without a baby, and that they see it as a digital babysitter.
Here's the thing. Bubble guppies is a little different. They're saying no screen time until 2, okay? That's what the guy that you just heard there.
Full off period. Don't even.
He was part of the Pediatrics Association that came out with those recommendations. But he did show that bubble guppies is different than an app that rewards the child with bright lights or music or something. If they get that reward, then they don't want to give it back, which then becomes cyclical. Think about that.
Sure, sure, sure.
You give it to them, they get the reward, you try to take it away, they scream.
You're creating a Pavlovian response in a baby.
But you give it back to them so they don't scream. You're perpetuating that cycle. Chime in on the open mic line. Screen time, your kids. Are you concerned? Are you making changes? I know I am in my house. 602-200-2733. Or like Bruce said, are you just going to roll the dice?
We want to have dinner without a screaming kid.
200-2733. We want to hear from you on our open mic line.
If watching YouTube videos of kiddies playing keeps that little beast quiet, we're good with it. Will it take our chances? Oh my God, just for a moment's rest. Arizona cities now trying to figure out whether or not they can or should arrest people for being homeless, for being out on the streets at night. We'll tell you the latest in this ongoing battle. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.